El siguiente es un programa pagado por el anunciante y 1600 AM ESPN Deportes no se hace responsable por las opiniones reflejadas en su contenido.
This is a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM, so please stay tuned.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
And welcome to another edition of the Portuguese American Hour. I'm Justice Neves, here with Dennis Borges, of course, our another Daily Dose.
That's right, a Daily Dose of the Portuguese American Hour on KGST, Multicultural Radio for the Valley and the world. We have another exciting show. Justice, we'll be having a guest in a little bit. We will also feature our moment in Portuguese history. We will have a Portuguese recipe, as always, and we'll have also this edition will feature a book and a poem, a book that we will recommend and a poem that we will share with everyone. Plus, we'll have a musical guest, as always.
All right.
That's your favorite.
Oh, yeah. I always love hearing the different music that we have.
So, let's start with your favorite then. Hey, we're here to please Justice and his favorite. So, let's start with our musical guest. She is one of Portugal's favorite, I would say, a mixture of folk and pop. You know, she's not pop in Portugal, how should I word this? I don't want to insult anyone, but pop music in Portugal has a couple different categories. It has the pop that everyone kind of knows, and has a particular segment called Pimba, which is kind of a repetition kind of a music. It's a very folksy, very musicians don't like it at all. They think it's kind of downgrading some of the musical talents of people. But anyway, this Isabel Silvestre does not sing Pimba type of music, but I would say it is a mixture of some of the folk songs that have been around, the traditional songs that have been around for generations. And she does it with a very different voice and also a different tonality. And I think you'll enjoy it, and I hope our listeners will enjoy it as well. So let's take a listen to the first of three songs that we plan on listening to during this Portuguese American Hour, a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at California State University of Fresno. We are going to start with Isabel Silvestre, one of the three songs we're playing for you this afternoon.
Oh, meu amor, quando fores, ai, deixa-me quem hei de amar. Não te deixo a ninguém, ai, eu se for hei de voltar. Oh, meu amor, a quem deste, ai, o teu lenço às pintinhas. Diz-me com dei um ai com sentimento, ai, abaixo.
And that was Isabel Silvestre. What do you think? Kind of a clear voice, huh?
Yeah, no, very clear voice. Yeah. And, like all the string instruments going on in the back. There was kind of a lot going on, but it all still blended well
yeah,
together.
Yeah, there is a lot going on. That's a good way to put it. we will transition into our poem of this segment of the Portuguese American Hour. As all of you know, it's a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute, California State University of Fresno. Thank you all for joining us. Please continue to join us, and please do pass the information along to your family or friends. It's kind of, I know that in today's world, there's social media all over, but there's so much information that we all are getting that sometimes people forget about the Portuguese American Hour. That's a no-no. That is one of the things that you don't want to forget. Never. On a daily dosage. So please pass the information to your friends that we are on AM 1600, and we are also, for those live stream, www.multicultural16am.com. I always got to remember that part. So the poem is called To an Unknown Grandfather, and it is by a poet that we hope to have here soon as a guest, and we will hopefully converse with her, because she is a retired professor from California State University, Fresno. She wrote a book in Portuguese, in English, I should say. She publishes poetry quite often, and she retired from California State University, Fresno, as professor of education studies, so a professor of in the education department. And this particular poem has an Azorean, a Portuguese theme. She is of Portuguese background. Her name is Judith Shibanti. And as I mentioned, we hope to have Judy on as a guest here very soon on the Portuguese American Hour. The poem is called To an Unknown Grandfather. And here it is. When the stranger strode across the greasy shop floor, ignoring the blowtorch in your hand, and spit out, "Do you know who I am?" Did you fall back at the darkened eyes in a face so like your own? Maybe you thought he wouldn't look for you, your grown child, when you fled only as far as Berkeley, its iron shops near the water. That night, did you tell your wife about the curious encounter with your past? Did you tell her, anyone, about Mary? Speak of the family you left behind. I reread the few letters you sent my father after he found you. Their postmarks say Fayal, the island of your birth in the Azores, and where you lived in your last years. A final letter is here in this stash of fragile paper shells, this one from your second wife. She writes that your body was found halfway down a sea cliff, the constable unsure of murder or suicide. And oh, there's no remorse in your letters. I imagine how you got on the bus one shattered winter's day. You rode to the end of the line, head pulled low, coat closed against monstrous fingers and damp cold. You picked your way past a wood railing and tugged through the wind-bent underbrush. Then, a long step to the edge as the pulse of the ocean grew alive in your veins. At last, the black haunting broke apart as you pitched down toward the sea's enfolding waves, its instant tides. So it's a very kind of dark poem in a way. we can interpret it a lot, of course, different ways. But it had that her poetry is very powerful. This one in the connection about the unknown grandfather from the Azores that so many people have had family members from the Azores, from Portugal, from other parts of the world. But in our cases, we are the Portuguese American Hour. Americans who have ancestors in the Azores, some of them never met their grandfathers because sometimes their fathers would come at a very early age due to economic necessity. They stayed here all of their lives, many of them not going back. And so there's lots of kids who did not ever meet their grandparents, although they were living in another part of the world, and that yeah. sometimes can be detrimental, although this poem touches on other issues as suicide, etc. So that is Judith Shibonte, who is a retired professor at California State University, Fresno. And with the poem, she has a Portuguese background, and a few of her poems have indeed a Portuguese connection. So I believe that it is time for us to go to a very quick song, our number two song for this edition of the Portuguese American Hour, as we have our guest on the line, and we will be talking to her very shortly. So let's take a second listen to Isabel Silvestre, now a little bit different than the first song we listened to a few minutes ago. Musical guest on this edition of the Portuguese American Hour, as you're listening to Isabel Silvestre, a popular singer from mainland Portugal. And we have our guest on the line, our live guest, who will be speaking to us about a very interesting foundation and project and festival, one of the biggest Portuguese festivals in the state of California that just began but is grown rapidly. And her name is Helena Vieira, and she is the president of the Carlos Vieira Foundation. Welcome, Helena.
On your show.
Nice to have you on. Let's thank you so much for taking the time. Let's begin, if you don't mind, by explaining to us a little bit about the foundation, the Carlos Vieira Foundation, what it is, what are the objectives. I know that you are the president of the foundation. So tell us a little bit about the Carlos Vieira Foundation that is here in Central California.
Absolutely. The Carlos Vieira Foundation started back in 2008 with Carlos Vieira, who's a race car driver, and he wanted to start raising money for a good cause. And so he started a campaign called Race for Autism to raise money for families who have kids with autism. And so that's how it started off, and they started in Merced and Stanislaus County. And now we have started to cover 21 counties in Central California, ranging from Shasta down to Kern County. And we also have three campaigns in total. So there's Race for Autism, Race to be Drug-Free, and Race to End Stigma.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about those projects. How do they come about, and how and what are they? If you can give us a little bit of detail about each one of them, if you don't mind.
Sure. Race for Autism, like I said, was our first campaign, and it started because Carlos knew someone who had a son with autism, and she recommended that Carlos start raising money for that cause, and it became a cause that was really close to Carlos's heart and everyone else at the foundation. And so with that, we raise awareness in the community. We have different events that are free for families with kids with autism. We also have our direct help grant program, and that gives families with kids with autism $500 a year to help pay for medical necessities, therapy, or learning devices for their child. So that's one of our campaigns that we're most well known for. But then we also expanded to include Race to Be Drug Free. That's just a campaign that helps keep kids off the street and out of trouble. And so through that, we, again, raise awareness. We work with schools to bring speakers into schools to talk about staying off of drugs. And then we also have a Gloves Not Drugs free boxing program for kids who go after school to keep them off the streets and out of trouble. Mm-hmm. That's one of our main programs through that. And then finally, our newest campaign is Race to End the Stigma, and that is all about ending mental health stigma. So we raise awareness about the harmful effects of stigma and start the conversation to try to stop it. Mm-hmm. And we also have a Race to End the Stigma scholarship for high school seniors who are willing to share their story about mental health or who are interested in going into the mental health profession. That's a little overview of all three of our campaigns.
Yeah, fantastic. And you said that you're basically in operating in 21 counties throughout the valley, throughout the state. That's amazing. How did it grow so fast?
Well, we have a very dedicated board and volunteers, too, who stand behind our mission and really want to expand these programs throughout the state of California. We also have people reaching out to us from different counties who mm-hmm. needed help, and we really don't like to turn anyone away. So once we became well-established in Merced and San Jose County, we knew it was time to grow. And as we got bigger, we knew that we could make an even bigger impact in the state and in the Central Valley.
And so you begin in Merced County, right?
Yes, we did.
Okay. And from there, it expanded to... did all the programs begin in Merced County, the different projects that you're involved in? Or did they... I know the first one that you mentioned, the Race for Autism, began it. But did the others also begin in the same area?
Exactly.
Okay. And as they've grown throughout the different states, the different counties, how has support have been for? I know these are excellent programs, and it's you know, kudos to you and the foundation and all the work that's being done. Some of it I was aware of, it. Some of it you just informed me for the first time, and I'm blown away by it. How has the support, financial support, how has that been coming as well?
We have received great support. Again, a lot of our support comes from the counties that we started out in. That's where we're most well known. But we've also received support from other organizations in other counties who share similar missions to ours, who want to help the same community as ours. So, for example, when we have some of our autism events, we have one down in Visalia, and mm-hmm. we also have one up in Sacramento. And so we partner with other organizations who want to give these families the same type of experience, which for this event, it's a free Autism Day barbecue for these families to come enjoy a fun time in a safe environment where they won't be judged by the public, anything like that. So we partner with other organizations who want to help fund this event and make it possible for these families.
And you said you have one of these in Visalia in the South Valley, and one is also in Sacramento, and these are done basically annually?
Yes.
Okay. Correct. And your board, the board is made up, as you said, you mentioned that there's lots of support from the board. So the board is made up of individuals mostly in the Central Valley, is it?
Yes, that is correct. They're all from the Central Valley, and they've all been, the majority of them have been involved with the board since the very beginning. They're very dedicated to our mission and continue to support us every year.
Okay, and we will be coming back in just a little bit, so we're going to take a little bit of a break here in about a minute or so. Elena, again, thank you so much for joining us. And on our second part of our conversation, I think we'd like to talk, if it's okay with you, about the San Joaquin Valley Portuguese Festival.
Absolutely, I look forward to it.
Okay, and I believe the Portuguese Festival began, am I correct in assuming it was last year, the first year, correct?
Yes.
Or this year, 2018.
This past April, April 2019 was our first event, and we're looking forward to our second annual event coming up on April 18th, 2020.
Fantastic. So we'll be right back to have a little bit of a talk about what happened at the festival for 2008 this last year, 2019, this year that is just ending. And we will talk about what all the plans that I've seen on social media with some very impressive names and lots of different things already in the works for the second festival coming up in April of 2020. So we will continue featuring Elena Vieira, who is the president of the Carlos Vieira Foundation, a foundation that is doing fantastic work here in the Central Valley and throughout the state of California. We'll be right back with the second segment of the Portuguese American Hour here on Multicultural Radio, KGST 1600 AM.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM. Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
And welcome back to the Portuguese American Hour. Again, I am Justice Neves here with Dennis Borges, of course. And now we are back to our first guest, Helena Vieira.
That's right, Helena Vieira, who is the president of the Carlos Vieira Foundation. We spoke for a few minutes about the foundation and its objectives, what it has done, its grand work throughout the valley, throughout the state. And now we're going to focus on this event that happened for the first time in April of 2019, which was the San Joaquin Portuguese Festival. So, Helena, do you mind telling us a little bit how this idea came about? How was this idea born, and what prompted the foundation to put this forth?
Absolutely. So Carlos Vieira was raised very involved with the Portuguese community, especially here in the Central Valley. His parents, Lorinda and Manuel Vieira, were very involved with everything that the Portuguese community does, and they still are to this day. And so Carlos wanted to have an event that would bring together the Portuguese community in a different way that they don't have here in the Central Valley, and also something that would appeal to the younger generation as well. And so he wanted to do this while raising money for a great cause, which is why our fundraiser of the Portuguese Festival benefits our Race for Autism campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of these ideas just kind of came together, and he knew that it's something that the Portuguese community would enjoy, and he also wanted to give this to the Portuguese community because he's always gained such support from them for our foundation. And so that's how the idea was born, and we received great support, so that's how we were able to make it such a successful event.
Yeah, indeed it was. I mean, a record turnout. Did you expect as many people as you had?
We were not expecting that many people. We were hoping it would be a big fundraiser. Mm-hmm. Our goal was actually 10,000 people, and we ended up having over 15,000 people.
Correct, yeah. It was a very, very powerful event. And what happened throughout that day? It was a full day event, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, so it started at 9 a.m., and it went all the way until midnight. It started off with a parade in the morning, and we had a lot of participants in that parade. It turned out great. And then throughout the day, we had different kinds of cultural performances from some folklore groups and philharmonic bands. We had Love the School Fight demonstrations and also Bull on the Rope demonstrations. And then we had a cultural exhibit going on, a wine and cheese tasting going on, plenty of Portuguese food and craft vendors throughout the entire event. And then finally, going into the evening, we had our headlining performance. So we had great performances by Alcides Machado, the Portuguese Kids, Aerotóxica, and Starlight were some of our headliner performances.
Okay, and there was an entrance fee for the festival?
There was originally, but then we had a change in the lineup, so we decided to make the event completely free for that year.
Mm-hmm.
This next year, we do plan to charge a very small fee at the door just to make sure that we're able to keep this festival going for the Portuguese community.
Sure. And it was held again at Interlock, correct?
Yes, it was held at the San Joaquin County Fairgrounds.
Okay. Now let's transition into what your plans are for this year. The festival is coming up in 2020 on, I believe you mentioned, April the 18th, right?
Yes, that's correct.
So another Saturday.
It is Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah, so we do plan to keep a lot of the same aspects from the festival as we did last year. Everyone enjoyed it. We do plan to add some more vendors. I know that was one of the biggest pieces of advice that some of our attendees asked for, was more food vendors. Everyone loves Portuguese food. So we're going to, of course, do that and then bring in some new performers, which I think you mentioned earlier that you may have seen on our Facebook. And so there's going to be a whole new lineup. Some people who are returning who were very popular last year. So we're looking forward to another great event and hoping for an even bigger turnout in terms of attendance.
What are some of the new performers that you have lined up for this year? Can you share a little bit with us?
Absolutely. So we actually have main performers going on all day instead of just the evening, all going on our main stage, the 5150 stage. And so the afternoon will start off with some performances by Taylor Amaran, a comedian out of the Bay Area. We also have performances by Alcide Mashavu, who will be coming back from this past year. Generations band, Chico Avila. The Portuguese Kids are also making a comeback for this year with some new material. And then our headliners for the evening are Ana and José Maloa.
And they come directly from Portugal, of course.
That's correct.
Yeah. And they're widely known. We'll actually play some of their music as we get close to the event so we can have those who listen to the Portuguese American Hour. Our audience is mostly Portuguese Americans. Some of them are in tune with the culture, others aren't, are discovering it for the first time. So we will make sure we'll try to get some of Ana and José Malhoa's music to play on here so we can promote your event as well. So it will be on the 18th. There was also one of the presentations that you had, which I found it very intriguing, was kind of a performance, but not so much a performance, also a workshop at the same time, or I think you might have had a different name. Those words are mine, not yours, but of kind of letting people know about what entails the bullfights. Can you elaborate a little bit on that for me, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So last year, or this past event, we didn't have a full-on bloodless bullfight. It was more of a demonstration. So we had someone there to explain what was going on during the bullfights, because this event is not only targeted to Portuguese people, but also towards non-Portuguese people who may be interested in learning about the Portuguese culture. The Portuguese culture is very prominent in the Central Valley, so we want to give non-Portuguese people the opportunity to learn about it. And so that's why for the bullfight, for example, we broke it down into a demonstration so that the non-Portuguese community could really understand what this cultural activity or event was all about, our bloodless bullfights that are very prominent in the Portuguese culture and here in the Central Valley.
Are you planning on continuing with that or addressing it in a different way?
We do plan to have something similar to that. We're still in the works of figuring out exactly how we're going to do it, but we do plan to have similar happenings as we did last year and definitely hope to be bringing that back to people in attendance at our festival.
I know it's kind of hard to figure out, but would you say that there was a good percentage, and I'm not looking for a number, but would you say there was a good percentage of those 15,000, you were shooting for 10 and you had 15,000 people, in your own mind and from the data that you have, would you say that there was a good percentage of people that indeed were not Portuguese background, but that wanted to discover the culture, a little bit of the music, obviously the food?
Yeah, absolutely. There is no way for us to really know, but based on just what I saw personally, especially through social media and things like that, there did seem to be a large number of people who either were not Portuguese or were not very familiar or involved with the Portuguese community, because, of course, there are many people with a Portuguese background who may not know a lot about the culture itself. So based on what I saw through social media and some of the people in attendance at the event, I did feel that we were reaching out to that target population as well.
What do you attribute the such a huge success? I mean, you you were projecting and hoping for and working toward getting close to 10,000, and you kind of beat it by 150%. So what do you kind of what made it so big?
I really do have to give a lot of credit to just the Portuguese community themselves. I think that once we got word out through radio and social media, the Portuguese community saw it and got excited and liked to talk about it and told the rest of the Portuguese community and their non-Portuguese friends, and the word kind of spread from there. We had people reaching out from all over the state, even some people out of state who came for this event just because they heard it by word of mouth. So I think that's one of the best ways that people could help us promote this festival and the great cause that this festival raises money for, just by spreading the word to the people that they know and encouraging them to attend.
Yeah, and it's very interesting. I think you and the foundation picked a very interesting time of the year, because for those who are in the Portuguese American community, we know that our calendar is so full of Portuguese American events between the months of May through even October. It's just like one event after another, and sometimes, you know, two and three and four different events throughout different communities, especially in the months of June, July, and August. And being a festival that features all the various aspects of the Portuguese American culture and the Portuguese American presence in the valley and throughout the state, picking April, kudos to you, because there are always things in the Portuguese American community, and that's good, but there's not a lot going on. It's kind of the beginning. So I think from now on, the San Joaquin Valley Portuguese Festival would be like the kickoff.
Yes, exactly. And that was part of our hope. But the other reason that we chose April is actually Autism Awareness Month as well. Mm-hmm. So it ended up working out for us in both aspects. Because, of course, the main reason for this festival, aside from just promoting the Portuguese culture, is to raise money for autism. And so having the event in April for Autism Awareness Month was definitely one of our goals. So we plan to keep it in that month moving forward annually.
Fantastic. And kudos also for having an event in the Portuguese and focused on the Portuguese culture and community that raises money for something that is important to all communities, such as autism. So, Elena, thank you so much for spending the last almost half hour with us. I know that time is of essence to all of us, and I appreciate it very much. We hope that the festival is a success. The Portuguese American Hour is here if you need to come back anytime. Please send us the information as well, and we'll be more than happy to promote it here on this daily event every day on Multicultural Radio 1600 AM in Fresno from 4 to 5. We'll be more than happy to promote it for you, and kudos to you and to Carlos and the whole Vieira family for such a wonderful foundation and for all the work that has been done, as you mentioned, by Comendador Manuel Eduardo Vieira and his lovely wife Laurinda for so many years. So thank you again for being part of our show today, and we are here if you need us, okay?
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. So that is Elena Vieira, who is the president of the Carlos Vieira Foundation. I've known her grandparents for many years. He is known, which I hope to interview here shortly as well. Manuel Eduardo Vieira, Comendador Manuel Eduardo Vieira, is known as the Sweet Potato King. He is the largest sweet potato, organic sweet potato producer in the United States, actually, I believe.
Wow.
Not in the United States, in the North American continent. And so right north of us here in Livingston, the mm-hmm. Livingston Atwater area, his wife, Laurinda Vieira, was president of the Casa dos Açores, which is a very important organization, Portuguese-American organization of Azorean connections in the city of Hilmar. And they've been very, very involved in the Portuguese-American community. They contribute to just about everything that is in the Portuguese-American community, and very, very happy to see this foundation flourish and all the great work that they're doing. The festival is a good way to promote the culture, mm-hmm. The food, as you mentioned, you know, the Portuguese music as well. But it's nice to see that it's for a worthy cause. It's for something that affects all communities, whether you're Portuguese or not, which is autism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So hopefully the 2020 event will be another huge success. I mean, it's going to be hard to beat 15,000 people, but I'm sure they can do it. And we'll be here to encourage people and to report on it. They have some great entertainment. We'll feature some of the entertainers as well. We'll feature some of their music. So put that date down on your calendar. And that is going to be April the 18th at the Stanislaus Fairgrounds in the city of Turlock. And before we go to our next break, I think we're going to transition in to our recipe of the week, if all that right. is at all possible. So let's have a little bit of music, and we'll give you the recipe of the week or the recipe of this show. And And our recipe is Portuguese donuts. How about that? So it's called filhosas. Okay, it's a different type of a donut. Okay, in Portuguese it's filhos, F-I-L-H-O. Actually, it's supposed to be in the singular, filho, but nobody says it that way. Everybody says it's filhos. Or F-I-L-H-O-S with a little accent on the O, because if there's no accent on the O, it's spelled or it's pronounced fidush, and fidush mean kids. So we're not going to make, we're not going to do that. We're going to make filhos.
Don't want to do that. Don't want to do that.
We're going to make filhos or filhosish in the plural, and because you cannot just have one. And here's the ingredients. Here are the ingredients for them. It's different. It's not your typical glazed donut, okay, that we see here. The recipe is from our friend Julinda de Maria Avila and her book Foods of the Azores Islands. And it calls for 6 eggs, a quarter cup of butter melted, about a third of a cup of sugar, a half a cup of lukewarm water, one package of active dry yeast, 1 teaspoon of whiskey. And this is an option, as you put it here, it's optional. Some people put it in, some people don't put it in. 1 teaspoon of grated lemon. Again, there's an option on that one because some people don't like that lemon. Very, very little lemon taste because for this amount. 1/8 teaspoon of salt and 4 cups of flour. So, how do we do this? Well, we beat the eggs, we add the sugar, the butter, and the yeast is dissolved into the water, the whiskey if you prefer to use it, the lemon rind, and the salt. You mix all of that well, beating until light. Then you add the flour, and then you beat it for about 20 minutes or so, okay, until the dough is smooth. And you're supposed to beat it by hand, you know, with your hands like this, you know, knead it by hand, but you can also do it in a machine. nowadays, everything is machine done, but if you really want to be traditional, you beat it by hand. So don't leave the dough too soft. Cover with a cloth, and you let that dough rise until about double of the size it originally started with, okay, double or more or less. Then you heat oil in a deep pan. Plenty of oil, and keeping heat at about a medium or so. You make the donuts about 1/3 of a cup. So you take about 1/3 of a cup or a little handful of the dough, you kind of spread it out a little bit. Okay, so you kind of spread out, not a little ball. I mean, you get it as originally a ball, but then you spread it out. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you put a little hole in the middle. Okay, and then you just put that in the oil and until they're golden brown, not brown, but more of a golden taste. Turning it just one time, you remove from the oil and you cool on a paper towel and you put sprinkle with some sugar, and the donuts are ready to serve warm or they can be served cold. So that's pretty much a Portuguese donut. It's not the easiest recipe in the world to make. They're very, very popular. As a matter of fact, the Fresno State Portuguese Club is hoping that this semester we're able to do some here in Fresno as a fundraiser for the Fresno State Portuguese Club because they're very, very popular. They're called filhos or filhosas for plural. Traditionally, people just call them by the Portuguese donuts. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that we don't, and they can be made several different ways. I said, you can spread out. Some people make just a little like donuts, small, a little ball of the dough and just, deep fry it like that. Deep fry it like that, then put a little bit of sugar over it, instead of, spreading it out. In one island of the Azores and in some areas of mainland Portugal, they're also called malassadas, which means badly cooked, because of the dough inside. So it's either filhos or malassadas. And it's interesting, they're not, other than a few bakeries throughout California, and sometimes people make them as a fundraiser, and that's how they're available. But if you go to Hawaii, you can find malassadas or Portuguese donuts everywhere.
Interesting.
Yeah, you know how they have the little coffee places at the strip malls, you know, the little coffee places you can go to, you know, the little independent, well, they have, or like they have little fast food places, you know, little kiosks. Well, they have kiosks all over Hawaii with malasadas, okay? So they're very, very popular. Were taken there by the Portuguese when they went there before Hawaii was a state, and it's just spread. I mean, it's kind of part of the Hawaii culture. Portuguese donuts or malasadas are all over Hawaii, and you can buy them. It's interesting, in Honolulu you can buy them all over the different strip malls, and they'll have like a coffee place and malasadas, and that's basically all they serve, and people have them at different times of the day. So it might be a good business opportunity for someone here in the valley to start a malasadas chain or a fideos chain throughout the valley. So that was our recipe of the week, and a little bit of history about it as well here in the New World. And time for our second break. We'll be right back with our third and final segment of this edition of the Portuguese American Hour.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM. Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Welcome back to the Portuguese American Hour. Again, I am Justice Neves here with Dennis Borges. As always, time for our book of the week.
That's right. Time to feature a book as we enter our third and final segment of this edition of the Portuguese American Hour. Remember, everyone, to please listen every weekday, Monday through Friday, 4 to 5. And please pass the information along to your family and friends. The place to be between 4 and 5 is only one place. That's the Portuguese American Hour, right? Right here.
1600.
Yeah, be here, be square, whatever it's said. so just be here. Don't be square. Be here. The book that we're going to feature is got to have a little bit of humor once in a while, right? Or we don't want people to fall asleep.
Yeah, throw some laughs in there.
The book that we're going to feature is not a joke book. So it is a good book. It does have some very, very interesting and some funny parts in it as well. It's called The Tenth Island. It was written by a Pulitzer Prize winner, which is Diana Markham, who we also hope to have on our show in the near future. So Diana has written, actually did a series of newspaper articles on the water crisis here in the valley and how it affected certain communities and folks in certain parts of the valley. They were published by the Los Angeles Times, where she works. She worked there for many years, and they got her a Pulitzer, which is not a bad piece of.
Not
bad at all to have on your resume, you know.
Never.
When you write or when you create, when you write and you can have a Pulitzer next to your name, it kind of gives you a hump. And I think that Diana is a very interesting lady. I've met her on a couple occasions, and she actually made a book presentation at an event that we have in Tulare in February, though we have already mentioned here in the Portuguese American Hour, and we'll have it again next February with another book. But anyway, reporter Diane Markham is her name. She basically wrote this book as she followed her, and I'm just going to read a little bit from the intro to it. She follows basically her life, goes through some personal sadness, and her career is kind of stalled. And so she stumbles upon an unusual group of immigrants living in rural California. So, as according to the piece, you were kind of unusual. She follows them on their annual return to the remote islands in the Atlantic Ocean, where bulls run down village streets. That is very. Volcanoes are active. Yes, they are. We just had a series of them. We might even have another island added to the Azores if a volcano keeps on being very, very active, a little bit off of the Faial, the island of Faial. So the seismologists in the Azores say there is a possibility that within, they don't know exactly, but within the next 5 to 10 years, it's not that far,
wow,
we might have another island pop up. Hopefully it won't do damage, you know, as the volcano erupts. That's the biggest problem. And the people celebrate festas to ease their saudade, a longing so deep that the Portuguese word for it can't be fully translated. Years later, California is in a terrible drought. The wildfires seem to never end. And Diana finds herself still dreaming of those islands and the chuva, our Portuguese word for rain, a rain so soft you don't notice it when it begins or ends. With her troublesome Labrador retriever, Murphy, Diana returns to the islands of her dreams only to discover that there are still things she longs for, and one of them may be a most unexpected love. So it is a book that she falls in love with the islands. She's unapologetic about it. She talks about various aspects and the connections between the valley and the islands. So the immigrants, whether they be first, second, or third generation, and the islands themselves. The 10th island. The book also says you think the 10th island is a place or a group of people. The 10th island is what you carry inside you. It's what's left when everything else falls away. Those of us who live between worlds just know that the 10th island, know the 10th island better. No matter where I have lived, I have never left my island. And that is kind of a myth in the Azores. We call now the 10th island those of us who live outside of the island. So whether you live in California or Massachusetts, or Rhode Island, or many immigrants who live north of us in Canada, or many who live in Brazil, or Uruguay, or other parts where Azoreans have immigrated to. We've also immigrated to Australia. There's a strong Portuguese community from the Azores also in Australia. So wherever we've immigrated, we kind of compose all of those geographical areas together and call it the 10th island, the diaspora, or the 10th island. So I would highly recommend the book, available wherever you buy your books at. It's by Pulitzer Prize winner Diana Markham, and it's called The 10th Island. It's about the Azores, but it's also about the Azores and the connections between Azoreans here in the valley and Azoreans in the islands. Highly recommend it, and it's our featured book for this segment of the Portuguese American Hour. From the book, we're going to go back to music. So we'll go back to listen to Isabel Silvestre, who is our musical invitee for this edition of the Portuguese American Hour. And we have had two of her songs. We are going to have a third song from Isabel Silvestre, our feature musician, our feature vocalist here on this edition of the Portuguese American Hour, a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at Fresno State.
Oh povo deste lugar, levantai-vos que é dia. Vinde fazer o café, que a madrugada vai fria. Oh ai, oh larai, oh ai, oh larai, oh ai, oh ai, oh ai, oh lai, oh. Oh ai, oh larai, oh ai, oh larai. Já cantam os passarinhos, oh povo deste lugar, levantai-vos que é dia. O sol já aponta nos altos, é dia de romaria. Oh ai, oh larai, oh ai, oh larai, oh ai, oh ai, oh ai, oh lai, oh. Oh ai, oh larai, oh ai, oh larai. Thank you.
And welcome back. As we come back to our final little segment here after our last music break there. That was a lot more kind of quaint compared to the other songs.
Didn't have all the different...
It didn't have as much going on.
all the different instruments going on. But I think she has a very fluid, beautiful voice. And I think that's what makes her well-known in Portugal.
Very, very flowing.
Yeah, that's right. Voice. Yeah, it's kind of soothing in a way. Yeah. You know, there's not a lot of the same... I mean, she carries it very well. You know, mm-hmm. So that was our musical guest, Isabel Silvestre. And our last few minutes that we have, Jesus, we'll talk a little bit about some upcoming Portuguese events. We are 2020 is upon us, and the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at California State University Fresno is going to gear up for lots of different things. We have events scheduled. I can give you the dates if I remember them off the top of my head, because I'm not as organized as I should be for this show, and I apologize with not having the notes, but I think I can remember. I've been working with them long enough, and that is we have an event on February the 6th when we will be presenting two books in translation to English. It's in a new collection from University of Massachusetts Dartmouth. It's called Belis Azorica, so it's Azorian books in translation to English. The director of that edition and one of the translators will be here. Then on the 20th of February, we have another event. We have the director of Azorian Communities for the Azorian government, Paulo Tebers, who was supposed to have been here in September, but unfortunately his dad got really ill and he couldn't make it. And so he will be here on February the 20th with an event. Again, all events are at 6 o'clock, so folks who are working can make it. The first event on February 6th is at the PEB, Peters Building, 191 Auditorium. The other events are all going to be in the library, Henry Madden Library, and it will be Paulo Tebers will be given a talk about Azorian migration. When did Azorians start leaving? They actually started leaving shortly after they were there to Brazil, and then from there to other parts of the New World. It'll also be our one-year anniversary. So the Institute was launched in February of 2018, mm-hmm. and with that event on February the 20th, there'll be things throughout the day. It'll be our 1 year anniversary. Then we come back on March the 5th, and we have a Portuguese writer coming from Lisbon, Portugal, Jamila Almeida, and she just wrote a book. She actually has written already four different books. Her latest book is called Esse Cabelo, and it's been translated to English, and that's one of the reasons why she's coming. It's going to be presented at different places, and it's called That Hair, and it's a take on the African-American experience. She was born in Angola, but has lived most of her life in Portugal. So African Portuguese experience. Mm-hmm. And she'll be here March the 5th, also at 6 p.m. in the library, in room 3212. And then on April the 2nd, we're gonna have our showcase of our Portuguese oral history. The community has heard me and you here talk about our oral history that we're collecting from different folks. We're gonna have an exhibit with posters about all the people that we've collected the oral history. And so it's a project of the College of Social Science and the College of Arts and Humanities with the MCJ, Media, Communication, and Journalism mm-hmm. Department that are doing the video recordings. Then on April the 25th, a symposium that I mentioned here on kind of reflecting the Portuguese-American presence in California. It'll be on a Saturday morning from 9:30 in the morning until 12:30, free of charge. We're going to have different panels from different parts, folks from different parts of the state. We'll finish at a community venue with a lunch, free of charge for all those who attend. And it'll be featured some Portuguese sopas, Azorian style, so you may want to attend just for the sopers. And then on April the 28th, our second part of our oral history, which will be, we've just had an event with the three Portuguese language teachers from Tulare High School, which have been our guests here in the Portuguese mm-hmm. American Hour. They will be teaching oral history in their intermediate classes, intermediate advanced. And so the students, the high school students at all three high schools will be interviewing people, and we will be having their show. So the students telling the story at the event on April the 28th, also at the library. So that's what we have. A lot of activities planned, mm-hmm. plus the secretary, or the director, I should say, of Agriculture and Fisheries for the government of Israel will be here present. We'll be here around the farm show in Tulare, the Agra farm show, Agra fair. He will also be here, and he will be here to give us a lecture on agriculture in the Azores. We have a book club in English, but a book club on Portuguese books based on some of the ones we've talked about here that is starting up at Fresno State. So lots of different activities this next semester. We'll be busy.
Yeah, definitely. I'm actually looking forward to see how the oral history project turns out.
Well, we hope to have you there, and we may even interview some of the folks there for the Portuguese American Hour here.
Yeah, I think that'd be great.
Yeah, fantastic. I think it's time for us to say goodbye. An hour goes by really fast when you're having fun.
Yes, it does.
And hopefully our listeners have had as much fun as we've had presenting the Portuguese American Hour, another edition. We thank you for joining us. We will see you next time. Remember, the Portuguese American Hour is a daily dose, so it is every day from 4 to 5 here on Multicultural Radio. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
This was a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Este fue un programa pagado y solo refleja la opinión de sus anunciantes. Ahora continúa disfrutando de la programación de 1600 AM.